Well, good morning, everybody. I feel like I'm back at school. Anyway, my name is Michael Leeworthy, and I'm excited to talk to you today about Windows Server 2012. I'm really happy to call it 2012. I've been calling a myriad of names internally for such a quiet time. Sorry, I'm a bit out of breath. Really quick toilet break. We were preparing for the keynote from about 6 o'clock this morning, and they wouldn't let me leave the backstage. So, anyway, as you know, in the keynote this morning, we announced it as Windows Server 2012, which is not a really big surprise to everybody. But the good thing here is that now we have a name, it makes things real. And today I want to talk to you about what Windows Server 2012 is and give you a really just high-level overview, not a marketing overview, lots of demos, to really show you some really cool highlighted key features. And then there's a bunch of sessions, about 5 or 6 sessions, on Windows Server 8, which go really deep into these technologies around mobility and direct access, around dynamic access control, around server management, around Hyper-V, storage, networking. So some of the really key deep areas. So I've got some slides at the end which I'll overview those. So I'd say at least try to go to 1 or 2 of those if you can. If not, catch them online. They'll give you a really deep understanding of some of the things we're going to touch on today. So I always like to start off with, where does Windows Server sort of fit in this world? And Windows Server fits in this world in a really nice way. And we talked this morning about private cloud and how you can utilize private cloud and seize the moment to really extend the capability capacity of your data centers automatically to be able to really provide that IT as a service option. But today I want to talk about Windows Server and how the plumbing of Windows Server really provides that option, both for private cloud, but also for just your data center. What happens if you just want to run workloads or want to run infrastructure to support your business needs? Windows Server can pretty much provide all that capacity out of the box for both data center operations and then integrate seamlessly with System Center, which you saw also this morning with System Center demonstrations, and really provide that out-of-the-box private cloud solutions. But I really want to talk today about some of the key data center features which highlight and will highlight some of the really core functionality of your data center, and that can really just push that integration into the private cloud a lot easier. So when we look at Windows Server 8, or Windows Server, you're going to hear me call it Windows Server 8 quite a lot. When we looked at Windows Server 2012, the way we go through a planning cycle, we started about 4 or 5 years ago in looking at our vNext products. And through that, we do a bunch of surveys. Partners, customers, on-site. We basically live in the footsteps of our customers and partners and really understand how they're using IT infrastructure. And then we come back with a bunch of new requirements about what the next generation of operating system would look like. And in the end, through a really key number of years, we whittle them down to a couple of core buckets that you see here. Our customers needed to scale workloads. Our customers needed to efficiently manage their infrastructure completely out of the box and also integrate that with management tools such as System Center. They wanted scalable web platforms, and they also wanted to support the next remote workplace. I mean, this is a big challenge. We have both managed and unmanaged devices. We need an operating system that can support that capability and functionality. And the good thing about here is it bucketed into 4 nice key areas, which we call beyond virtualization, the power of many servers and the simplicity of one, every app any cloud, and the modern work style enabled. So this is what the marketing boys and girls will go and do, and they'll push these quite hard. But what do these really mean for you? So let's actually talk about some of the features and technology in Windows Server 8 that go about making up some of these core key pillars and the value that this provides. So starting with beyond virtualization. Now, what do we talk about beyond virtualization? What we talk here is taking virtualization as a core functionality and making it integrate into everything that we do in the Windows Server environment to go beyond the physical virtualization. You know, just virtualizing the CPU and GPU memory is not enough. We want to take that concept into fabric, into storage, into other areas. And you saw some really great examples of that this morning, and I'm going to touch on those a little bit as we do today. But when you look at ways that we've built in Windows Server 8, we look at virtualization in three key areas. Providing a complete virtualization platform, both for physical virtualization of servers, virtualization of your storage infrastructure to create a lot of flexibility in the way that you can deploy resilient, reliable storage, and also virtualization of the network infrastructure. That gives us a number of key new technologies. We also wanted to increase scalability and performance. The concept here there is, you know, we wanted to say there was no workload that couldn't be virtualized with Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V. And in fact, you know, some of the new scale performance and numbers we have at the moment are just fantastic. 160 logical processor support on the host system, 32 virtual proc support, supporting the vast amount of SQL workloads out there will sit happily within that environment. And then also starting to remove the host level barrier. I want to communicate directly to the hardware. Now, hardware vendors are making great new solutions around, you know, offline data transfer, around fiber channel. I want to take advantage of those directly in the guest. I don't want to rely on the host to communicate for me. So this is what we can do now with our virtualization platform. And then also connecting to cloud services. How do I take my virtualization platform and connect that into the cloud? Either in a hosted provider or a service provider or into a private cloud, I want to make that jump really easily. I want to have that hosted service provider as an extension of my data center when I need it. So let's have a look at some of these areas in a little bit more detail. With Windows Server 2012, around providing key virtualization platforms, we introduce private VLANs to support multi-tenant and isolated multi-tenant and security. What this means is we integrate encapsulation of our network protocols, encapsulation of the network infrastructure to create secure multi-tenant environments. Now, this can be used, of course, for a hosted environment, but also can be used internally if you want to actually do multi-tenant of your divisions internally, of your large organization, government organizations, defense organizations. We see many organizations using this. The great thing here is that we're utilizing the same physical fabric here, the same physical architecture. So I can have multiple divisions, multiple organizations running on the same physical network, completely isolated from each other, completely managed from each other. The great thing also that is we scale beyond the VLAN, some of the VLAN issues that you have out there. For example, at VLANs, you can only support, 4,095. Most switches will only support about 1,000 VLANs. With network virtualization, we basically break through that barrier of VLAN support. So you can actually now easily integrate this network virtualization layer into your organization and support, you know, thousands of these organizations or thousands of these divisions on that same physical infrastructure. But we take that one step further, and we now provide IP portability. So the concept here is that my server can own its IP address no matter where that server lives. So if you cross a subnet, its IP address stays. If I cross a geographical barrier, that IP address stays. If I go into a hosted provider, that IP address stays. I mean, these are challenges that many organizations face today. If I use a hosted provider, the hosted provider usually provides me that IP address. If I'm using VLANs and I want to move VLAN subnets, I have to reconfigure a whole heap of stuff. Excuse me. Presenting 101. Here we go. So with our IP portability, you know, we've all got servers that sit in the corner that have a static IP address, that we have an app that's a couple years old, that IP address is put in there, and, you know, when we try to move that server, things break. With network virtualization, that no longer is a problem. I can take those servers, take those virtual workloads, move them around my organization, keep their IP addresses. Now, underneath, we're doing all these address translations. So in my hosted environment or my internal environment, yes, I have physical network IPs underneath this. So my hoster might have a 10.0.0.0 subnet. I might have a 192.168.1.0 subnet. Underneath that, our hoster keeps the 10.10, but we're doing the address translation at the network virtualization level. So really exciting technology around virtualizing the network platform. We also introduced new quality of service aspects in Windows Server 8, which guarantee minimum bandwidth services as well on the networking infrastructure. And now we're increasing the networking capability, so things like storage now utilizes networking in a way that we've never, really never used before. Quality of service becomes a really key component when deploying Windows Server 8 solutions. Now, if you look at increasing scalability and performance, I think this is really where we're seeing a huge amount of changes within the Hyper-V infrastructure. Around performance, we can now have virtual fiber channel support in our Hyper-V guests. So those HBAs can now be virtual HBAs. I can connect directly to those HBAs on my SAN environments. So if you've got SAN infrastructure, you can now make this more performant utilizing Windows Server 8 technology and have my guests directly attached to those. When we take that one step further and shared storage or SAN devices that you can utilize offload data transfer or ODX, we take complete control of that can utilize that within the Hyper-V environment or in the Windows Server environment as well, not just Hyper-V. But effectively, if you've got your Windows Server infrastructure on ODX-compliant hardware, you'll actually make those token calls to those SAN environments to allow those super-fast copies. And the good thing here is I'm just offloading the processor power. The concept here is that, if I want to copy a file from one server to another, if I'm utilizing, some sort of shared storage that's not ODX-compliant, I'm utilizing processor power to actually copy that file. In an ODX environment, I'm just telling the SAN to go and do that. So it takes my copies down from minutes, or hours in some cases for large files, down to seconds and milliseconds if I'm utilizing that SAN environment. But I think the biggest one, of course, is the Hyper-V host scale-up. So let me show you a graph of where we are with the current beta. So you can see in our current beta, we're supporting 160 logical processors, up to 2 terabytes of memory, and support about 1,000 virtual machines on the host infrastructure. From the virtual machine infrastructure, we now support up to 32 virtual processors and 1 terabyte of memory, and now also can support the 1,000 odd active virtual machines. So amazing scalability figures than we've had with our previous versions of Windows Server. From a clustering perspective, we now support up to 64 nodes and 4,000 virtual machines per cluster. You don't need a 64-node cluster to support 4,000 virtual machines. You can have a 10-node cluster that supports 4,000 virtual machines if they're fairly heavy, hefty machines. But the big thing here is we wanted to take sort of the whole argument about scale off the table. Jeff showed you this morning, we now support 64 terabyte virtual hard drive formats with our new VHDX format. So you can have huge amounts of storage, you can have huge amounts of virtual processor support, huge amounts of memory to support nearly any type of workload that you want to throw at this Hyper-V environment. You now integrate that with ODX, you integrate that with virtual HBAs and a few other things that we'll talk about, and effectively you're going to have exactly the same performance in our Hyper-V environment that you'll get in a physical environment. Again, there's no workload that you can now not no longer support within our Hyper-V environment. Now, if you look at connecting to cloud services, there's a number of new technologies within our Hyper-V environment that allows easy connection to cloud services. What I'm going to do is I'm going to skip over this, and we're going to come back to this when we talk about every app in any cloud, because I think this Hyper-V replica is a really great example of a technology which you can use both internally, but also utilize in a hosted or a cloud environment. But with that, what I want to do is show you some demonstrations of the things that I've talked about today. All right. So one of the big things that we now support within Hyper-V is the ability to utilize SMB, your message block protocol, instead of just direct attached storage. Now, in previous versions of Hyper-V, if you wanted to create VHD files, you had to have direct attached storage. Now, that could have been a SAN and you create LUNs and all that, but effectively, Hyper-V needed to see this as a C drive or a D drive to be able to sort of connect to it. Now, moving forward within Windows Server 2012, you can now utilize SMB shares for your VHD storage. We've done a lot of work within Windows Server 8 to make SMB the performant capability performance for our applications. In fact, we now support Hyper-V over SMB and also SQL over SMB to be able to utilize those easy shares. The good thing about that is it's easy to start tiering my infrastructure up now. So before, if I wanted to build up my Hyper-V environment, I had to think about processor and storage. And I pretty much had to sort of come to a happy medium in the middle and go, all right, well, I want to, it's my Hyper-V infrastructure. Now, with this, I can start tiering all these components away. I can say, here's my storage infrastructure here. And my storage infrastructure is based around the new Windows Server 8 storage components. I can now support SMB. And then here's my processor power. So these are blade servers with high memory and high processor support, which is running the runtime on my Hyper-V environment. So I can really start thinking about how I'm deploying at that base level my Hyper-V infrastructure in the organization. So let me show you an example of that. So I'm just going to go and create a new virtual machine here. Just call it a new VM. Give a little bit of memory. Just skip the networking. And here I'm going to create my virtual hard disk. But in this case, instead of using that C drive, I can actually just now wander out to a server and an SMB share and drop a VHD file in that SMB share. So if I finish that off, as simple as that. Now my server itself, that VHD file, has now been created in that SMB share. And because that's an SMB share, I can actually start doing some other cool things about that. I can cluster that. I can do really cool things with that SMB environment separate from my Hyper-V environment. So I can build this resilient, reliable SMB infrastructure to support my Hyper-V information at commodity prices. And this is the really big thing that we're talking about here, is high resiliency, high reliability for our Hyper-V environment at commodity storage prices. Now, some of the new changes we've had within our Hyper-V environment, if you have a look at some of the settings here, and the things that we talked about before, that now we now support up to a terabyte of memory within this environment. A dynamic memory is now runtime enabled, so you can actually go and adjust your dynamic memory up while the machine is actually running. Virtual machines running. Processor, we support up to 32 processor support, and that's integrated with NUMA capability as well. So you have full NUMA support within our Hyper-V environment. And the big thing also here is Hyper-V compatibility. So if you're moving between Intel boxes or AMD boxes, you can actually easily just move your Hyper-V environment between those. Very important when we start talking about live migration aspects. If you look at our network infrastructure, you can also see that Hyper-V can take advantage of any hardware acceleration. Again, offloading to some of the great new hardware technologies that are being built in that server infrastructure. So I'm just going to offload all my network runtime and processor power to this hardware, again, increasing the performance of my guest within that Hyper-V environment. And it's the same thing as well in supporting SRV I/O within Windows Server 8, both from a Hyper-V level and a Windows Server level as well. So we're really now taking advantage of some of those new hardware acceleration and hardware offloading features, both in Windows Server 8 proper and also our guest environment as well. Now, once I've got an SMB, a virtual machine running in SMB, I can do some really cool things with it. So, for example, here's a virtual machine that I've got running. And if we have a look at the settings here, you can see that this is actually running on an SMB share in my environment. Now, the good thing about that is, and Jeff sort of touched on this morning, we've really increased the live migration functionality within Windows Server 8. And it's not just share nothing live migration. So we introduced live migration in our previous version, which allowed you to live migrate a virtual machine from one node in a cluster to another node with zero downtime. But it required a cluster to do that. And we've enhanced that functionality in our clustering services. So now we support synchronous live migrations within a cluster. Before it was serial, now it's synchronous. And basically, you're only limited by how much bandwidth you can shove down that communication pathway within that clustered environment. So it's not limited to 4 or 6. It's basically how much bandwidth you've got available in that live migration environment. And anything that can't fit down that will just basically pull up and spindle up, and then it will just actually sort of go through or schedule its way through as it goes in there. We also introduced a whole heap of new other features for Hyper-V within clustering services as well. Clustering services, our cluster shared volume files can now support encrypted services. So this is really good in a hosted environment. When you've got IP in a hosted environment, they can actually ensure that EFS is on that clustered environment. We also support affinity and anti-affinity rules within a clustered environment. So if I've got these two virtual machines, SharePoint, SQL, when I do a failover, either planned or unplanned, I want them to move together. I can set some affinity rules up. Here's server 1 and server 2. I don't ever want them running on the same node for whatever reason. I can set anti-affinity rules up with those environments as well. We also have things such as, in a cluster environment, things like cluster-aware updating, which I think is one of the coolest features, which we'll talk about into the server component of this talk. But also, we can actually now start peeking into the Hyper-V environments and actually understanding a little bit how their processes are going. So we actually have some application-aware functionality. So for virtual machines, I can go in and have a look at the health of the services. If some of those services are failing, I can actually do some maintenance on that. In fact, I'll move them to a new node or I'll shut the VM down or something like that. Very, very basic, but enough from an aspect to understand some of the health of the services in that environment. Of course, if you then want full application health monitoring, you would move into a... I thought I turned you off. You would move into a virtual machine infrastructure, into a system center infrastructure. So again, going back, so we had that live migration, that clustered environment. Then we thought, well, how do we extend that live migration? How do we ensure VM portability no matter what the environment is? So then we looked at how we could extend that with live migration. So now we have multiple aspects of live migration. Live migration within a cluster. We then have live migration with shared storage. So let me give you an example of that. This folder, this app, this was moving. This virtual machine was utilizing SMB shared storage. I can easily move this. Now you saw this morning in System Center. Let me show you the wizard in Windows Server 8. So for example, here we now support both virtual machine live migration and storage live migration as well. So again, you can actually carve up your entire virtual machine into aspects and move all these around independently from each other. And I'll show you some really key examples of that. So I'm going to move the virtual machine at this stage. I'm going to move it to a server in my organization, server 1. And I'm only going to move the virtual machine. So I'm going to say, just move the runtime. Just move the processor runtime. Click finish. And why that's up and running. It will then copy that across. However, what bandwidth I'm running at, I'm actually only running at 10 here, so it's going to be a little slower. And then that's live migrated across into that server 1 infrastructure. The good thing here is because I'm utilizing SMB storage, all I'm doing is moving that processor component around. So again, live migration, SMB shared storage, completely out of the box in this environment. Well, the other thing is what Jeff talked about this morning was shared nothing live migration. So, for example, here, what I've got is a virtual hard drive that's sitting on my C drive. Again, I can easily grab that, same thing, hit the move button. I've got, again, choice of either moving the virtual machine or just the virtual machine storage. So I can actually just leave the runtime on that server and move the storage around. Great if I wanted to do like an update to my RAID system or something like that. Or I can actually just move aspects of that. So again, I'm just going to move that to a server. But what I'm going to do is I've got a number of choices here. I can actually move the virtual machine to a single location, and it will prompt me, what location do you want to move this virtual machine's files to? Configuration, snapshot, smart paging files, VHD files. Where would you like to move them to the destination server? And I've got that ability to browse that server and whatever that server's on there. Or I can actually just say, all right, whatever it's set up on that server. You know, I'm sure the administrator set up a Hyper-V infrastructure aware all this stuff. Just rely on that and go and do that. I can actually move all the hard disks to different locations if I've got multiple hard drives. So this is really, you know, if I'm doing maintenance on my server and it's a SQL server and I've got the boot VHD and then I've got the data VHD. Well, you know, the boot stuff is not going to be used all that. So I'm going to put that on commodity low storage, but my SQL database, I want to ensure on highly performant storage. So I'm going to move these VHDs into two different server infrastructures and the processor to another one. Hyper-V can handle that. It can handle all those aspects sitting on all those different servers. But also I can move the virtual machine aspects to different locations. So you see here are all the four components that make up the storage infrastructure of my virtual hard drive, my virtual machine. And I can choose when and how I move these in my organization. So I'm just going to actually just move the virtual machines files automatically. hit the finish button, and now we're doing a shared nothing live migration. Now, this is an 8 gigabyte, 11 gigabyte. It's a big file to move across the network. So this will take 3, 4, 5 minutes based on what's happening at the moment. The good thing here is it's live migration. So why this is happening, I still utilize that. I can still use that VM. There is zero downtime for my end user. There is a tiny millisecond brownout when we finally move move the virtual machine from one node to another. But again, it's going to have no impact on the application and no impact on the end user support. The big thing here is at this stage, we put the virtual machine into synchronous write IOs. So basically, at this stage, when we are on the destination server, we create the infrastructure, we create the template of the virtual machine, and any writes that are happening are being synchronized and mirrored to both systems. And then as we start moving all this type of information across, we then just do the parity right at the end and move the virtual machine across. So the great thing here is I can do this from server to server. I can do this from cluster to cluster. So again, I can move my virtual machines in and outside clusters in my organization. I can also do this from local to hosted. So big thing also, if I'm using network virtualization, as we talked about before, I can actually just pick this up and move this into my hosted infrastructure. The IP addresses don't change in my organization, no matter where I put this in my organization. So it's a very, very exciting technology in that environment. The other thing I wanted to talk about is NIC teaming. Now, we now support NIC teaming within Windows Server 2012. And the great thing about this is NIC teaming is completely out of the box. There we go. So the good thing is you can integrate NIC teaming into your Windows Server 8 infrastructure. You can also integrate NIC teaming and take advantage of that in your Windows Server infrastructure as well. So our NIC teaming component here is available in our server infrastructure. You know what? While this is doing the little shared nothing live migration, let's flick it to another server. Make it a little faster. So you can see here, easy wizard. I can then easily choose which ones that I want to use. Create a new team. Say choose 2 and 3. Give it a name, NIC team name. Click OK, and we're done. And our NIC teaming infrastructure is up and running. And straight away, we've got a fault because I don't have a network cable plugged into one of these. So again, NIC teaming straight out of the box with Windows Server 8, no reliance on any other infrastructure, no reliance on any other drivers, and Hyper-V can actually utilize this through the new Hyper-V switch. Okay. Oh, let's go back. Sorry, new Fandazzle mouse. All right. So let's talk about server management, because I think server management is one of the coolest new features in Windows Server 8. We've done a lot of work in Windows Server management to integrate this effortless sort of manageability and continuous availability solutions. And there's a great session that Jeff Snover and Aaron are giving on this topic later this week, which I implore you to go to. They're going to go into some very cool features. And one of the big things, of course, is PowerShell 3.0, which is just phenomenal. But there's some great new technologies around the management infrastructure within Windows Server, around continuous availability, cost efficiency, and management efficiency. And I want to walk into some of these into really detail because I think these technologies just really make Windows Server 8 the best in its class. So if we talk about continuous availability, we talked about Windows NIC teaming, and I showed you those. We talked about virtual machine live storage migration. Well, I didn't show it to you, but it's pretty much exactly the same as virtual machine live migration. But the big thing here in continuous availability is now called transparent failover. SMB is incredibly important to us in Windows Server 2012 around Hyper-V and around SQL. And so we've done a large number of investments to ensure SMB is performant and continuously available. And one of the big things here is now transparent failover in a clustered services. So the great thing here is when you set up transparent failover in our clustered services, there is no downtime in my applications that are accessing that infrastructure or accessing that SMB share if those nodes fail over. And we do this a number. We can do this a number of ways, and I can show you some examples of this as we sort of wander our way through. But one way that we sort of do it is we utilize distributed network names or distributed network nodes. So we actually keep caches of the data on these different nodes and utilize DNS round robin to actually access this. So the good thing about this is if I do an SMB failover, I can instantly connect to that other node with no SMB downtime. It's very, very exciting stuff around a continuous availability environment. I think the other one that I think has got a lot of stuff is around cost efficiency. Now, one of the things that we've really tried to do is look at the storage infrastructure. So while we've worked on SMB to create this, you know, aspects, you know, this storage infrastructure communication protocol to give you the same performance, reliability, and resiliency that you'd expect from more expensive solutions, we then looked at the base level storage infrastructure. All right, so I've got the SMB protocol and I can get really fast access and I can now support my Hyper-V and my SQL systems and a whole heap of other things as well on that that SMB infrastructure. But what about my underlying storage? How do I ensure that that's highly resilient without having to go into expensive hardware solutions? Now, if I want incredible, reliant storage solutions, SANs are definitely the way to go. And as I said before, we've done a lot of new investment in SAN infrastructure to ensure that SANs are still really key to that highly performant, highly available storage for the customers and solutions that need it. But for many organizations, they want that capability, but they want it at commodity prices. And this is a new technology that we call storage spaces. And storage spaces is virtualizing the storage layer. So with Hyper-V, we virtualize the server layer, the physical server layer. With network virtualization, we virtualize the network layer. With storage spaces, we virtualize the storage layer. What this gives me the ability to do is take all these disks that I have in my storage arrays and create large, resilient, reliable storage solutions and then cut them up at a virtual layer. And I'll show you a really great example of this. You saw a small sneak preview of it this morning. I'll show you a really good example of this. And then on top of that, we can then build a whole heap of other storage solutions. Thick and thin provisioning, trim of our thin provisioning, deduplication inbuilt in the Windows Server 8 infrastructure. So there's a lot of new storage capability, which you'd expect from SAN-like environments, that are now built into the Windows Server 8 environment at that commodity level. The last level, of course, is cost efficiency. We wanted to look at multi-server management within the console. Now, with Windows Server 2000 and R2, you can do multi-server management. You can connect to servers and stuff. But effectively, if you wanted to do things like add and remove applications, add and remove services, you either TS'd into the box or you stood in front of the box and you really sort of did that. If you wanted to do really any type of, full-on maintenance on that server, you were pretty much on that server or connecting to that server. What we wanted to do was integrate this into an easy, effortless tool. So we've now built this beautiful multi-server management environment with the new server manager within Windows Server 2012, which really just provides a lot of seamless ways to manage your servers, look at the base level health of your servers, look at the performance of your organization, and deploy new roles and features in that environment. And I can show you some really great examples of this. The big thing here is it's all built on PowerShell 3.0. PowerShell 3.0 becomes so important to us in the Windows Server environment. And if you don't know PowerShell now, spend a little bit of time and really get to know it well. And we've done a lot of work to help you do that. To give you an example of our investment into PowerShell 3.0, I think in Windows Server 8 we had about 100-odd PowerShell commandlets. In Windows Server 2000 and R2, we had 230. In Windows Server 8, we currently have over 2,300. So we've had a 10 times increase of the PowerShell commandlets. Now, the big thing why we've done that is everything in our server management infrastructure is built on PowerShell. So when you look at our server manager underneath, when you do things, it's kicking off PowerShell scripts. The great thing here is you don't have to have that management thing open while things are happening. You can close it. Underneath, the script's going to run fine. If something happens halfway through that, connectivity issue happens, when the box comes up, script will start again and move throughs again. So we really provide a lot of key components for that stateless environment. And I think there's some really core new features and functionality around PowerShell. And when I say to people, what's 2,300 PowerShell scripts, they go, wow, it's a lot to learn. Again, we really wanted to create an easy way for you to access this PowerShell environment. And I'll show you a really cool example of that right now. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is sort of walk through... some of the new server manager features that we have within our Windows Server environment. So what you're seeing here is the new server manager that comes with Windows Server 8. Now, if you boot up Windows Server 8, this is the first thing you're pretty much going to see. The good thing here is it's a nice, welcoming Metro-style app. It uses the sort of quick glance view that the Windows phones have put out there. Green is good, red is bad, right? So I can quickly glance at this and go, hey, green is good, red is bad. The good thing here is it's actually going out and aggregating all this information across my environment. So I've got 5 servers that are utilizing file and storage servers. I've got 5 Hyper-V servers, 1 IIS server, 1 RDS server, and then my local server. And so I can actually view this type of information and the health of that environment. If I wanted to click in on these, I just basically click on it, and it will show me that information within that environment as well. If I wanted to add servers to this view, I just basically can add other servers to manage. I can look through AD, I can add IP addresses. I've got that ability just to pull all those servers into this server manager environment. Well, my local server administration is done at my local server. So you saw this before. So if I wanted to do, originally in R2, the roles, so the server manager, you had an aspect of this. Again, all that information is here. It also brings in my events, any services, BPA, performance, again, in one single tool. But I think the value of this is if I look at all servers, I can view this information by, say, clicking on one of these guys, and I can view all the events no matter what server I'm on. I can view all the information about those, or I can select them all and view all the information across those. I can filter my events, so I can say, only show me events that have 75 in them, so I can filter that information, make that a lot easier. I can filter my services. The big thing here is we have BPA, or the Best Practice Analyzer, inbuilt into Windows Server 8, so here it's showing me, here's the things that you really should be looking at in this environment. And I can look at my performance across my organization. Again, completely integrated. And again, if I wanted to look at one single server, I can actually do that in this environment as well. So it gives me that ability to easily access all the servers in my environment and look at the health, look at the event, look at the monitoring. I've also got the abilities to create server groups. So if I wanted to create certain server groups, say if I wanted to say server 1 and 2, and I can, call this my group. Oh, let's try that again. Let's go and add the servers this time. So now I can see here that I have my group here, and I can view information about those. So if I wanted to look at the manageability of those, or the performance of those, the services running on those, apparently, which is none of them. I have that type of information as well. Any type of service that I deploy in my environment, if I've got that server added into my server manager, I will be able to manage on my left-hand side. So even though this server doesn't have remote desktop services installed on it, that's a bad example, even though this server doesn't have IIS installed on it, I can manage the IIS infrastructure through this server. And I can easily do that by clicking on the Tools button, and all my management tools are associated there as well. So I can easily do that through here, or I can just right-click on it as well, and it will actually bring up any of the type of configuration that's associated with that server. So if I wanted to launch Windows PowerShell, I'm launching Windows PowerShell for that server, not on the server that I'm on. So this gives me full remote capability of that environment. As you can see here, that it's remoting into RDS 05. So let me show you some great new technologies we've been built in here. So we talked about storage pools. Now, storage pools This idea is just a bunch of disks that we're joining together. And we had a technology like that a little while ago. What we've done is we've taken that sort of concept of how we actually build this integrated just a bunch of disks environment and how we built more resilient and reliable storage functionality on top of that, and then how you can virtualize that information. So a storage space to me is a storage pool which is made up of a number of disks. The good thing about this is they don't have to be like disks. I don't have to make sure every disk is 136 gigabytes and it's part of the X RAID array or storage array. I can make up storage spaces or storage pools from any number of disks. SSD, RAID, iSCSI, I mean any type of these disk environment, I can then join into this storage space environment. So if I've got a USB, I've got a internal hard drive and a USB hard drive, I can actually join them together in a storage space environment. So let me give you an example of that. I'm just going to create a storage pool. Give it a name. Again, you can actually choose, these are the available drive pools. If I had other servers with drive pools, they would actually appear here as well. But this is my only server that's got spare drive pools. And then I can choose which servers I want in this environment. So let's choose a couple. I can actually assign these. I can allocate them manually. I don't want to add them to the storage pool yet, but I want to allocate this as part of that storage pool. So I don't go back tomorrow and put this somewhere else. Or if I have another administrators, they don't steal this, put this drive from me. Or I can make this a hot spare. If I have three drives and a hot spare and one of those drives goes offline, bring that hot spare up for me automatically within this storage space. In this case, I'm just basically joining these 337 gigabyte hard drives together to make 410 gigabytes of storage pool. Now, we're not making volumes at this stage or anything. We're just basically creating a fabric of our storage infrastructure. So this should only take a few seconds. Okay, that's done. So once that's done, the next thing is to create a virtual disk. So this is when we start thinking about how we're going to carve that storage space up, or storage pool up. So a virtual disk is how do we want to now deploy storage to this actual pool. So for example, I can grab this pool and I can say, well, I want this to be the Hyper-V SMB share. Okay? What resiliency do you want? Do you want it just simple? So I'm just use hard drive space? Do you want it mirrored? Do you want parity? Right? So you can see here, if I'm mirroring, I'm going to copy that data across two or three disks. If I'm parity, I'm going to actually, similar to RAID, software RAID, I'm going to increase the parity, put the parity across those disks. In this case, I'm just going to mirror that. All right, what storage do you want? Do you want fixed storage? So I'm going to allocate you 100 gigabytes, and it's going to be 100 gigabytes. Or you know what? You want thin storage. Now, my Hyper-V guys have these great thoughts. They're going to want thousands of gigabytes and stuff. So you know what? I'm going to blow their mind. I'm going to give them 200 terabytes of data. So I'm going to create that. It should only take a few seconds. Now, if you look here, click on my storage pool, I now have a 200 terabyte capacity virtual hard drive. Now, I can go create a volume on that. I can create a volume on that as well. I won't do that because it will take me a long time to format it. But the concept here is that when my Hyper-V guys look at that, they go, wow, look at that, I got 200 terabytes. Now, we know they're never going to use 200 terabytes. They might eventually, but I'm betting on the future here. So the concept here is even though I've only got 400 gigabytes, I'm betting on that today I only need 400 gigabytes. But maybe 6 months down, I might need a terabyte. But I don't have to change any of that infrastructure to support that. But what happens if I do? So let's actually create a new virtual disk here. And we'll create a fixed one here, shall we? We'll just create a simple one. And we'll give it 350 gigabytes. So we're basically creating a fixed virtual hard drive for these guys. Now again, utilizing the visual cues, yellow, something to look at, red, really bad, green's good. So in this case, I'm running out of space. I've only got 55.5 gigabytes, but I've got this 350 gigabyte file. If I wanted to, you know, and this virtual disk may be being used consistently. So if I wanted to extend that, allocate more drive space to that, it's easy for me to do. So for example, what I can do is I can just add physical disks to this on the fly. It's a small little server manager bug. It's fixed with new builds. Okay, here we go. It's because I spoke too long is the problem. Here we go. Get rid of that. Click on my pool. Add a new physical disk. I'm just going to add this new capacity. And what this will do is it will just extend that storage pool by another 136 gigabytes. So now I've got 544. So my SQL guys, which were 350 gigabytes, now they're actually running out of space. I'm going to extend that. I'll now give them 400 gigabytes on the fly. And this will actually do it on the fly. So there's no downtime. There's no reconfiguration needed. Effectively, that's what I'm doing. My application guys, all those applications that are utilizing that storage infrastructure see no difference. All they see is more hard drive space instantly appear in this environment. I can cluster storage spaces as well if I want more resiliency in that environment. So it gives me a lot of great capability in that storage space. And again, once I've created those, I then go and create volumes. So you can see here, I can easily now create new volumes. That will give me the choice of creating volumes across my entire server range. Now remember we talked about multi-server management. Well, you can see here are my servers that are running file services. So I can create volumes on any of these servers. I can create shares on any of these servers. I don't have to go to those servers and TS into those servers. I can do it from here. So if I wanted to go to R5, if I've got disk capability available, I can easily do that. For example, we've only got disk capability available here. I can create a volume structure here. You know, let's just make it really quick so it formats really quick. I'll give them 10 meg. Give it a hard drive space. We also have got a new file system called REFS, Resilient File System. Come out to the booth and we'll talk a lot more about REFS and some of the resiliency we've built into this new file system infrastructure. I just want to get through some of the stuff we have today. And now basically it's done. That volume's done, that eDrive is done. I can also add more space to that volume as well. So if I wanted to extend this volume on the fly, and I wanted to say now give them 15 megabytes, I can do that on the fly as well. So it's not just at the pool level or the virtual disk level, it's at the volume level as well. Because remember, we're talking about virtual fabric here, virtual storage fabric here. So I can actually mold and change and flex this as much as I want in that organization component. So some very exciting things when we talk about storage spaces and some of the capability that we can provide in creating sort of highly resilient, reliable storage solutions at commodity prices. So you think here, you know, I've got the ability to create resiliency through mirroring parity, all this flexibility, all this capability, build SMB services on top of that to support SQL and Hyper-V, and I can do it with a bunch of disks. So it's a very compelling solution when I talk about my storage infrastructure, especially in that sort of silver gold storage infrastructure. My platinum is always going to be my SAN related, you know, highly available, reliant SAN solutions are still going to be really utilized. These give you the ability to come down and provide that type of technology at those commodity prices. Some other things I wanted to show as well, we talked about failover. Now, what we've done now is with continuous failover is when you create shares, you can actually define what those shares are going to be. So I've got a SMB server here in my clustered environment. I'm just going to go and add a shared folder to that. Here we go. And you can see here, I can actually select a profile for that. Again, we're getting a little bit more focused on what's this share. Because generally, an SMB file share has been a file share. It's a share where I store files in. But now it can be an application share. I can have a basic share. I can have an advanced share where I'm going to utilize data management solutions. I can have an NFS share. Got VMware out there? Why don't you use our version of NFS? It's fast, integrated. You can actually utilize it in your Windows Server 8 environment. So we have that, we have NFS share components within this environment as well. Oh, someone really wants me. We also then have SMB server application shares. Now, the difference between these is the way that they're deployed, the way that they're managed, and some of the configurations that we do to support the SMB-based protocol and the way that the network configuration is done. And we have a full, absolutely full big white paper where you can actually go in and really understand some of this SMB components. So I'm just going to choose a server application share. I can put it on my path here, give it a share name. The next thing is going to ask me a bunch of questions about that. One of them is, do you want to enable continuous availability as part of this cluster? So the thing here is that as when I create these SMB shares integrated in part of that wizard, it's going to ensure that I inbuild any resiliency as part of that clustered services if I require that, especially for a server application share. Now, if I've created a basic share, that thing's going to be unticked, I don't need. But we're going to say, all right, since you created an application share, you're going to want continuous availability. Do you want me to encrypt the data access as well? Do you want me to do access-based enumeration and things such as that? So I'm just going to cancel out of that. But effectively, you can see that integrating this SMB failover clustered service and this transparent failover and building that infrastructure into a clustered environment is really, really simple with Windows Server 2012. Now, the last thing I wanted to show you in this environment is that we talked about PowerShell and how PowerShell is integrated fully into everything that we do around Windows Server 2012. And there's a number of things that we do within our PowerShell environment. And we've got some great new features and functionality in PowerShell. And we've tried to make the scripting of PowerShell a little bit easier. So let me give you an example. So if I want to get all the Windows features, it's pretty easy. Get Windows feature. There's all the Windows Server features that are associated with this server in my environment. Well, that's good, but I really just want the Windows Server features that that are installed. So, where installed equals true. There you go. All right, so there are my Windows Server features where it's installed equals true. Well, what happens if I want them on a different server? Well, it's pretty easy. Why don't we just come back here and go computer name. Yep. And what's it? RD13SIV04. Go out to that server and find those. That's great. So from PowerShell, we've really tried to make it a lot more easier, removing the dots and slashes and a few other bits and pieces to make scripting a whole lot easier. But as I said, we have 2,300 commandlets currently in the beta. So how do we make that a lot more easier in your environment? So we do that through a new tool which we call the ISC, Integrated Scripting Environment. So if you've never used PowerShell, or if you have used PowerShell, this can become one of your best friends. So effectively, every commandlet is associated with this environment. So that let's have a look at that commandlet that we were using before. So it was, basically you can just type it. So here's Windows feature. So there's the get Windows feature. So there's information about that. If I wanted to know all the parameters associated with that, here are all the parameters associated with that get Windows feature. If I wanted to actually fill information about it, if I wanted here, I was going to say RD, RD13SIV04. I can actually copy that and run these components straight from this environment as well. But we won't do that today. So the big thing here is that we can actually fully understand these, and build these within that ISC environment. Now, I'm not going to go too deep into this because the management session is going to go really, really deep into this. But I do want to show you one really cool thing. So that's great. I mean, you can have a look at all the parameters. You can know those. But one of the things our scripting guys have had that we haven't had for quite some time is IntelliSense. And you think PowerShell and IntelliSense, I mean, it's scripting, so it should actually go hand in hand. So now we've actually integrated scripting into the ISE. So, for example, there's my Windows feature. And if I want to know the parameters, there are the Windows parameters. So again, it's easy for me to utilize PowerShell, to get to know PowerShell, to get to understand PowerShell in these environments. So if I wanted to know, you know, things about installation, is what are the PowerShell things when it comes to installation? Well, it's easy for me to actually look at those and say, all right, well, here's how to install a new role-based service in my environment. So I can get all those parameter type informations. You know, you can see here, do I want to remove it? Do I want to add it? What's the feature and service name? I can look at all the parameters of those, and again, I can easily do that within an integrated environment. So I think some really great new things within our PowerShell environment. So last thing I wanted to pick on is in the server manager environment is that whole concept of role-based deployment. So adding roles and features is really, really simple in this new server-based wizard. The good thing here is that you can not only add new role-based features within the same server, you can add them on any server in the environment. So for example, here you can, I can add them to multiple servers. So if I wanted to add the IIS service to all my servers, I can do that easily through this environment. So by just multi-selecting them or creating a server group. In this case, I'm just going to select this one, which is my server 5. It will go out, look at the features that are deployed on that, and it gives me the ability to deploy those new features, also uninstall features, roles and features in any server in my environment. Big thing here, so I can also deploy to a virtual hard disk as well. So it gives me a lot more capability in the way I'm deploying new roles and services in my environment. All right. Let's talk. So let's talk a little bit about every app in any cloud. Now, I don't want to talk too much about cloud and private cloud as part of this. There's a lot of sessions that are focusing on private cloud and how Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 8 really play a role in private cloud. But I really wanted to talk about how you can utilize Windows Server 8 to join into the cloud infrastructure, whether it's private cloud, whether it's public cloud or hybrid cloud or hosted or service providers. There's a bunch of new things that we do. A lot of it's around flexible virtual machine portability. We talked about network virtualization, be able to utilize network virtualization and move VMs around. You could do this in a hosted provider in environment as well. The big thing here that we talk about is the new IIS infrastructure that now supports a whole heap of new things such as the in-memory distributed caching, it has new components around multi-tenant high-density websites, the new multi-tenancy features within our SQL environment are really key to what our hosters are going on. And we have a session that's focusing in on IIS if you really wanted to do that. One of the big things around cloud infrastructure is some of the new features and functions that we're building into our Windows Server 8 environment, which I think are just directly related to the cloud or fully integrated into the cloud. And I think there's two that are really, really exciting that I just want to demonstrate in this environment. And I think the first one is a new technology which we call Hyper-V Replica. Now, Hyper-V Replica can be used internally. You don't need a cloud provider or service provider for it. But I think also we're seeing a number of service providers jump on the Hyper-V Replica bandwagon, enabling the sort of the site or VM disaster recovery solution in your environment. Now, Hyper-V Replica is a synchronous replication of my virtual machine. So it's not synchronous, it's asynchronous. Sorry, it's my bad accent. So the concept here is we're taking a point-in-time copy of your virtual machine infrastructure and deploying that wherever you want to deploy that, internally, to a geographical site, or into the cloud. We're seeing a lot of host providers to do that. Now, Hyper-V Replica itself, really, really simple to set up. So to give you an example, you can see again in my Hyper-V environment, I can enable replication. It will ask me a bunch of questions. Where do you want this replicator server to live? In this case, I'm just going to do it in an internal deployment. What authentication do you want to use for the replica? I'm going to use, because I'm internally, I'm going to use Kerberos. But if I'm externally, if I want to replicate to a cloud provider or to a service provider, I'm probably going to use certificate-based authentication based on this. And, you know, and they're going to give me a certificate associated with those. Do I want to compress the data transmitted over the network? Oh, absolutely. What are the VHD files that you actually want to deploy in the Hyper-V replica solution? And you can actually pick and choose which VHD files associated with the virtual machines. What recovery points do you want? By default, we replicate every 5 minutes. But do you want to be able to recover back a number of hours? So we can recover back to the latest one. Or would you want to go back 1 hour, 2 hours, up to 15 hours, I think, that we have in the current beta? But also, the big thing here is we can also do VSS or volume snapshot copies as well. So for applications that are VSS aware, Exchange, SQL, a bunch of ISV applications, we'll go into those applications and tell them that we're doing this, and they'll do their normal dirty bit parity stuff that they do with VSS to get ready to do that snapshot type environment. So it just makes the replication a lot more efficient. The other thing is, how do you want to replicate? Do I want to send it over the network? Well, internally, that's fine. And maybe I'll schedule that to be 2 in the morning when the network's not being used. Because if I do it now, I'll probably blank out my boss's golf website surfing or something. But here, if I'm doing this to a service provider, if I'm doing this to my data center sitting in France, I don't want to do this over the network, over the wire, because one, if I'm doing a service provider, if I've got a bunch of these, it might be like a terabyte of data I'm sending, and that's going to either cost me a fortune or it's going to take me a week to do over that internet connection. So I can actually dump this out to some external media, Blu-ray, optical drive, whatever, and post them to it. Here you go. Here it is. Go and deploy this. Bring it up. Connect our systems together, and then we'll do the final updates since I sent it to you as well. So this gives you that ability to set up that environment really easily and really quickly without the cost of bandwidth in that environment. So that's how you set replication up. Once it's set up, we can go and have a look at our replication here. You can see that since I set this up, which I think would have been 11 o'clock last night, we've had 28 replication cycles. Is that 11 o'clock last night? Oh, 11 o'clock this morning. There hasn't been many. We had a few replication cycles, and our last replication was less than 5 minutes. So I can actually determine the health of this. So let me show you how Hyper-V replica works. Now, this is one virtual machine. I'll talk about multiple virtual machines in a second. So let me show you this. So here you go. Here's my virtual machine, and I'm going to turn it off. So my disasters happen. Somebody stripped over the power cord and the server's gone down. At this stage, my site is down. If I wander over to my replica site, this is the replica of that server. Oh, hang on a sec. This is the replica of that server. You can see here I've got a number of snapshots. These are those points in time that we set up in the wizard. All I have to do from a replication point of view is failover. It'll ask me what recovery point do I want to use. I can say I want to use the latest one. Hit the failover button, and then we're up and running. And it will start up, and we'll be up and running in about a minute. Now, if I'm utilizing network virtualization, it's going to be fine. It'll be able to I can handle that no matter where that is. But one of the great things about replication as well for Hyper-V replica, if I have a look at the settings here, we actually integrate new failover TCP/IP settings. So what I can do is I can inject IP, both IP4 and IP6 settings, into this replica when it comes up. So if I wanted to come up with a certain IP address, I can actually inject that in the replica so I can handle my DNS records at the stage. So again, inbuilt asynchronous replication in this environment. As I said, this is really exciting from an internal point of view. It gives you the ability to do that backup replication into a replica site, and you can do this for any virtual machine in your organization. So it's from a virtual machine level. But we're seeing a lot of hosted providers and cloud providers really look at this as a great solution. Now, the good thing here is that it's completely orchestratable as well. It can completely be driven by PowerShell as well. So the great thing here is you can actually utilize orchestrator tools like System Center and actually start doing site recovery. Concept here is I take all my virtual machines and I copy them, I replicate them to an off-site, offline, off-site or a cloud environment, and then with my System Center technology, I can view the health of that site. If that site goes down, my orchestrator can take care of doing the whole replication failover, and I can be only down for a small amount of time in that replicated environment. So it's a really, really exciting technology, I think, for in that continuous availability, both entry level for medium business, division level for enterprises, and then of course, from a cloud environment as well. One other great technology that we built in Windows Server 8 around, I wouldn't call it continuous availability, I'd just call it backup, is the ability to do integrated backup. Not integrated backup, we've had that for a while, haven't we, Michael? All right, let me find my server here. Here we go. But now what we have is online backup in Windows Server 8. So we actually have cloud backup inbuilt into the Windows Server 8 platform. So anybody can get this. We haven't announced a huge amount of information about it at the moment, like all the how much size and all that pricing, licensing, all that type of stuff. But effectively, to set it up is really, really simple. You can see here my online backup service is I add this to my Windows Server infrastructure. Effectively, I'm just going to register that server into my online system. And I must have cut and pasted something before. Let me do that again. Put my password in. Let's hope that works. Whether I want to use any proxy services, I need a passphrase to do the restoration, and I'm basically going to register that server as an online backup solution. And you can do this for multiple servers in your organization. So the concept here, you can have multiple servers backing up to that that environment and be able to restore aspects back to those servers, whether the local server or other servers in that environment. So once you've got that set up, you can see I've set this up before, so we've got a number of things. It's easy then to just schedule a backup. And it's simple as the normal backup tools that you may have seen before. So I can go and add items. So for example, here we can go pick on, what have I got? VM admin, desktop, I'm sure I got something here. There we go, back me up, there you go. When do you want to back up? Again, similar aspects we've had before. What's my retention models? Creating the backup schedule, and that backup will now run as part of that integrated system. So again, if you wanted to do simple backup, you can both do local backup and also online backup for maybe critical files, fully integrated and baked into Windows Server 8. And again, we can just basically hit the backup now, and you can see this will actually back up into the cloud. So some really exciting technologies in connecting Windows Server 8 into just basic Windows Server 8 into cloud-based services, Hyper-V Replica and Cloud Backup. It's just touching the surface of some of those that we're going to do. So the last thing I want to talk about is how we're extending the modern work style. Now, the modern work style is really interesting, and there's a great session on it tomorrow in the keynote, and there's some other bits and pieces as well. So I'm going to sort of touch on some of the areas where I think we've seen some great enhancements into Windows Server 8 over some previous versions. So the concept here is that devices are changing, and the way people are using devices are changing the way that we need to support the infrastructure to support their experience, both managed devices and unmanaged devices. I want to ensure as an administrator that when my users are accessing their applications, that those application access is secured, whether they're using a slate, a tablet, a mobile device, a phone. I want to ensure that they're not dumping IP information onto that device in an unsupported, unencrypted, unprotected way. So we've really tried to work on how do we ensure Windows Server 8 is that platform to support these new modern work styles and modern capabilities. So we've done some things as well. We've integrated and made it easier for remote sessions and VDI and server applications as part of the tool. So you can easily now deploy server app type experiences and VDI experiences to support these managed and non-managed devices and ensure that that session is held centrally and no data is being deployed on those services as well. course, USB device support within that environment. But I think there's some really great ones in the concept of this new full Windows experience. We now support remote effects over WAN environments. So this is great for hosted desktop environments. We also now support remote effects multi-touch. Touch is going to be incredibly important in the Windows 8 environment, and now we support multi-touch environments across that as well. And also the concept of user VHDs. So here, if you think about a VDI infrastructure, I could have a template which is running the desktop of that user, and all their settings, their components, all their applications that they use, which is dissimilar to that template, are kept in a user VHD file, which is applied to them when they basically log into that system. So some really great things there as well. Some other things around in security and compliance, we've simplified direct access. I don't know if you were a few people that deployed direct access out of the box, but you know there was a white paper you could beat a whale to death on how to integrate it. We've made direct access completely integrated into the environment. Seamless integration into Windows Server 8 to make it easy to deploy your direct access type solutions. But I think one of the biggest things is the new involvement into claims-based access. And what we're doing around claims-based access is the ability for now when files, Word documents, user-type information is stored on file shares, we can actually go through those and ensure that there's no personal information or if there's sensitive information, we can automatically encrypt that and not rely on the end user to do that. So for example, if I dump a Word document up on a file share and it's got my social security number on it, Windows Server within about 30 to 60 seconds will determine that that's got a social security number and automatically encrypt that file for me through our claims-based file access. So some really, really exciting new technologies around the way we're supporting the classification infrastructure technologies. So one, I just wanted to show you one quick example of what we're doing in this environment to make things a whole heap easier. I'm just going to wander back to my server manager here. I'm just going to add a new roles and features. And what I'm going to do is out of the box now, we now have this whole concept of an RDS environment or scenario-based installation within the installation focus of Windows Server 8. So VDI or session-based infrastructure, session-based virtualization is fully baked within our Windows Server 8 deployment infrastructure. So I'm going to choose an RDS service. And the thing here is setting up RDS requires a number of features. Session brokers and virtualization servers and template servers. Well, what we've done within the VDI solution is to get you up and running really quickly. We now have a quick start, which basically takes care of all this for you. Ask you two questions. Do you want a VDI infrastructure or do you want a session virtualization infrastructure? And I'm going to set this up out of the box. So I'm going to do a VDI infrastructure. Which server do you want to deploy it on? I'll deploy it on the local one. It will go out and ensure that I have the right components installed on that to support it. Once it does that, it will then return to me, ask me where the template is going to be. In this case, where is that gold template that you're going to use? You're going to use for your virtualization, your VDI infrastructure. And then it will basically deploy that. So again, VDI out of the box in what, 8 or 9 clicks? I've hit the button, takes about 10 minutes to deploy, and then my VDI infrastructure is completely up and running. I can then, if I want to go out and create 100 users' desktops, it's as simple as me going into my remote desktop services manager tool and go provision 100 desktops for me, and it will go and provision these 100 desktops. So again, trying to make, again, VDI and session-based virtualization easy to deploy in your environment so you can start using it for a lot of these new modern work-style devices that our consumers and our users are now bringing into work. So with that, I hope that I've shown you some really great new technologies today. I think we've just touched the surface of what Windows Server 8 can provide. Let me show you here. Let me go here. I mean, the feature lists go on and on and on and on about some of the new features that we've basically deployed into Windows Server 2012. So some very, very exciting new technologies coming out. I think I showed you about 15 of them, and there's hundreds and hundreds more associated with those. So remember, look up a few of these sessions, especially the Server Manager and PowerShell, where they'll go really deep into ISI and the Server Manager tools, talk about the new Server Manager implementations that we're building to ensure that management infrastructure is just effortless out of the box, dynamic access control solutions. And then, of course, we have a couple of new ILTs that are happening in the environment, and then the Hyper-V storage and networking solution, which will go deep into that SMB technologies. So with that, I say thank you very much for listening to me today. Go out, deploy Windows Server 2012.